This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Wave of new membership cards powered by Supportland. Enjoy the enhanced new benefits. KBOO will be producing live on-location broadcasts of the 2013 Illihi Monthly Lecture Series, Who Owns You and What You Can Do About It, making this valuable information available to the entire community. Tune in, turn on, and remember, will air Tuesday, January 29th at 6 p.m. Hear Sharon Wood Wortman share memories as a volunteer KBOO reporter in the 80s. If you have a story to share from KBOO's past, contact Lynn Fitch, 503-231-8032, extension 222, or navigator at kboo.org. This has been the Weekly Navigator Report. Thank you.
KBOO Radio is proud to help Zippity News in a clothes drive to help clothe the homeless. We will be collecting gloves, hats, and scarves until February 15th, when the clothes will be distributed throughout the homeless community. KBOO is located on 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just off Burnside. Thank you, and we hope to see you donating clothes to help keep the homeless warm this winter.
Case of love. Hey, this is KBOO 90.7 or FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Abe ain't here. It's just me with my old friend, Connie Crooker. Now, I just a little background, folks. Connie is a friend I've known for 100,000 years. Mm-hmm. And she was at Reed College when I first met her. And she... Here's the weird thing. You know, I remember you, I think it was down in the canyon, naked with a dog.
That's right.
Naked with a dog in
naked
the hot sun.
With the dog, yeah.
Very pretty girl, naked in the sun with a dog. Okay, so, not going too far into that, but, you know, thinking about that, now you're back here with us. You've just recently published a book called Melanoma Mama.
That's right.
Which is about... skin cancer.
Yes.
So what I'm going to do today, I want to hear from people out there. I don't know who's going to call. I don't know why they're going to call. I'm going to tell them it's 231-8187. But your experience, your story is inspiring, depressing, terrifying, and also amazing. So far, So far, you're here. Yes. And you were dying. We're going to talk about this a little bit. I guess we should talk first about some facts. Mm-hmm. You're minding your business. You've been a defense attorney. Mm-hmm. You hung out at the coast and also in Portland. Mm-hmm. You had interesting adventures of too many, and we won't talk about them.
Uh-huh.
But here you are, a woman of some experience and amusing person who's played rock and roll music all through
including
this.
Including Bad Case of Love,
including
we just heard.
Bad Case of Love. And so what happened? What's with the cancer thing?
Well, I was going along fine in my retirement, having a good old time, traveling, camping, hiking, and I got really sick, and they couldn't figure it out, and it took a long time to diagnose it, and it was a recurrence of a melanoma that I had had removed from my back 18 years before. It came back 18 years later, and melanoma is the deadly form of skin cancer.
Okay.
There are two other kinds, squamous and basal cell, that aren't quite as dangerous because they don't metastasize and spread all over the place.
Right.
But melanoma spreads, and once it spreads, you're pretty much a cooked goose, and it's a matter of time for, you know, how long they can keep the thing at bay. But they don't talk about cures when you have what they call stage four melanoma.
And that's you?
That's me, stage four. And I thought, well, at least I'm not stage five. And then I asked the doctor one day, I said, is there a stage five or is that the other side of the grass? And he goes, Connie, there's no stage five.
Oh, this is terrible. They were sitting here laughing about a disease that will, I guess, eventually kill you.
Yes. Yeah.
And you've gone through some amazingly, what sounds to me like torturous treatment.
Torturous. Yeah.
Poisons.
Yes.
They burned you, they poisoned you, and they've cut you.
Oh, yeah.
All the three
over
things.
Over and over. Over and over.
And here you are.
Yeah.
So your story is an amazing one. It's not a triumph over disease. There ain't no such thing.
Not this one.
And but it's also a story about a life well lived,
mm-hmm.
which I kind of like.
Yeah.
And you knocked out this book, hardly mm-hmm. knocked out, struggled to get mm-hmm. this book done.
Yeah.
And it's doing okay, and it's, you know, it's independently published, mm-hmm. and there's some really amazing stuff in here. You mm-hmm. go camping all by yourself?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was pretty much preparing to wind down my affairs and check out. The doctor said, get your affairs in order.
What does that mean? No, wait a minute. What does that mean?
That means write your will, do your, you know, plan for your funeral, all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, get your affairs in order. So the doctor had told me that, and I just thought, well, I'll wait, you know.
What the hell? Yeah.
Let somebody else get my affairs in order after I'm gone, you know. And then I just sort of miraculously started responding to treatments that were intended just to ease my suffering at the end of my life.
They're called palliative.
And
right.
It clicked a switch and helped my immune system fight the cancer. And when I found out I was going to live instead of die, I took off on a cross-country tent camping trip.
And that went well.
Oh, I had a great time. That's what most of the book is about, Melanoma Mama on Life, Death, and Tent Camping.
I see.
Yeah.
Do you have
yeah.
any suggestions about not locating your tent under a dead tree?
Well, the main thing I write about for the danger in there is the lightning storm. Yeah.
Lightning storm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did have an occasion where lightning struck and a tree went down, but it went down two campsites from the one I was in.
Wow.
If I had chosen that campsite, I would have been hamburger.
So, well, cooked hamburger.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, so we're, so I, like probably a lot of people, have a dreadful fear, not of death. I mean, my idea of ideal death is I'm walking down the street, it's mm-hmm. a cloudy day, I'm mm-hmm. talking with friends, there's a 60-story building, mm-hmm. a safe breaks loose, falls down, mm-hmm. turns me into a little jelly mm-hmm. belly.
Yeah, kind of the Charlie Chaplin version of death.
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin version of death, which more and more is not true.
Yeah.
Never was really yeah. true. We used to think people died a natural death and it was all cool, but what it was grandma was up in the attic slowly dying.
Right, yeah.
We now know that a little better, and yeah. at a younger age.
Right.
So So here you are confronting, you're not a particularly mystical or religious person.
No.
But here you are confronting end times. Mm-hmm. I love that. End times is so grim.
I'm confronting death, Joe.
Death! Oh, don't say it!
We can say that.
Well, and I'm interested not only in your experience, and we will talk about, mm-hmm. you obviously, being a very well-educated woman, have explored all the roots of alternative care and of the mainstream care, and mm-hmm. you've done everything that is doable,
mm-hmm.
and you're here.
I'm here.
And we don't know how long you're going to be here.
Mm-mm.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But at some point, some new site will appear mm-hmm. that will take you out.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the deal.
Yeah. It comes back periodically. I've been fighting the metastasis for the last 4 years.
Okay.
And I had the initial round of hideous treatments 4 years ago kind of held things at bay. And then I had one small spot that appeared that they removed surgically.
Mm-hmm.
And then this, just less than a year ago, brain cancer. It moved to my, it's not brain cancer. It's melanoma that metastasized
to
my
brain.
Yes. And so that resulted in two surgeries, one brain radiation, and a round of immunotherapy treatments.
What's that?
Well, immunotherapy isn't quite chemotherapy. It's worse. It's worse. Yeah.
Okay. What is it? How do we – what yeah. Well, yeah. What? Tell me.
The idea is that they're going to boost your immune system and your own body is going to fight the cancer, which sounds all natural
well,
and good and
very
everything.
Very healthy. Good.
Yeah. When I first heard that I was going
a
to
mighty
have immunotherapy,
fortress is our body.
Yeah. I thought, well, this is good. This is kind of like natural medicine. Well, it's unnatural the amount of stuff they give you to boost your immune system. When your immune system is heavily boosted, it fights everything. It fights the cancer and all your and your heart and your lungs and your liver. And I mean, you just start getting sick, and they bring you to death's door with the immunotherapy. So they have to give you the treatment while you're hospitalized. And then I ended up in the intensive care unit from the treatment itself when my blood pressure dropped so low they couldn't give me any more of the treatment. They just almost killed me with it.
So, you know, I almost feel like, oh, why are we shouldn't do it. You know, when I was a kid, people got cancer and, mm-hmm. and died. And mm-hmm. the way it was discussed, at least among the women folk, was, she's got cancer.
Right.
You know,
yeah, right.
Like, if you say it out loud, it will get you.
Right, yes.
And of course, there's a number of things to think about here. I believe that we are living in a much increasingly toxic environment. This has nothing to do with your disease. I want to make a clear distinction here,
mm-hmm.
because melanoma is, to some degree, preventable disease, right? You can avoid it by not getting too much sun.
Avoid the sun and you'll have a better chance, yeah.
But, yeah. But even then.
Even then, yeah. And there are environmental factors. They think that, like, in Australia, they might have more of it because something about the ozone layer there is a little weaker. So I don't know. There are some things that, you know, the sun getting through to our skin is somehow worse than it used to be.
But the strategy, those of you out there now healthy and thinking mm-hmm. about this, you should be, is to examine your body.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And to without any romanticism,
mm-hmm.
look for uneven, dark, pigmented, moly types of things?
Yeah, moles that change size, moles that have ragged edges, moles that have more than one color in them. Anything that looks like just not a... Oh, and moles that grow, that are larger than a certain diameter. There are signs to have them looked at. And you want to have them looked at by a dermatologist. I had two general practitioners pass on my mole that was bad.
Really?
And said, oh, that looks okay to me. And so I was delayed in the initial diagnosis 22 years ago because just general doctors looked at it and didn't see it as bad. And the third doctor said, that's coming off. And by then it had already
metastasized.
It had spread, yeah.
Now, those of you, probably most of our audience knows, but metastasized simply means that through the lymphatic system, I think.
I don't know how
Nobody knows.
Runs around.
But cells of the cancer move to other sites of opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and it can be anywhere on your body.
Right. And with melanoma, melanoma is unusual because you cannot predict where it's going to metastasize to. Some cancers, you can watch certain sites in the body because that's the most likely place they're mm-hmm. going to go if they move. But melanoma is tricky. It can show up anywhere.
It's a drag.
Yeah, it's a nasty little disease.
But you are, considering.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'll put aside concern. Yeah. You're amazingly chipper.
Well,
what's the deal?
What choice do I have? I'm here.
Good point.
And I'm not going to be gloomy while I'm here because that would be a waste of time.
But you went through all this hellish treatment stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Hellish means literally at death's door sick.
Right. At death's door sick over and over. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Well, the thing about, I'm chipper right now because I'm feeling pretty good. I'm recovering well from the last brain radiation, which uh-huh. was the end of October. But there was a time during, a couple months after that brain radiation where I'm just lying on the couch with not much oomph and not much motivation, and I wasn't very cheery. But I belong to a cancer support group. It's a group of women that meets at Providence,
mm-hmm.
and we meet weekly, and we all have late-stage cancers of various forms. And so you get to know the women, get to love them, and then they up and die on you. It's quite a support group.
Jeez. Yeah. I don't know. I have very morbid thoughts,
right. Yeah.
Very dark thoughts, right. Particularly since I'm politically conscious and I think everything's going to hell.
Well, yeah, you've always thought that.
Well, I've been right.
Right. You've been proved right over and over, Joe.
Right. It just keeps going on. The only part I'm wrong about is how far it can go.
Yeah.
But amazingly, you've done this thing. You wrote this book. You have an amazing degree of energy from my perspective. Not knowing how you feel, but knowing how you present yourself. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. All in all, I know we have lots of callers.
Okay.
And I think what we're going to do is go to the phones. You should insert wherever you feel appropriate fact.
Okay.
Particularly where there's misunderstandings. There's a lot of magical thinking about cancer. You're
yes.
probably deeply aware of that more
yes.
so than I am.
Yeah.
I think it's important to discuss for real,
mm-hmm.
the issues of melanoma,
mm-hmm.
and also to discuss for real, I guess there's the alternative of doing nothing and dying.
Well, that's a choice that most of us make at some point. You get to the point where you've had enough treatments, you know that you're done with treatments.
You don't want to do it anymore.
You're just done.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the women in my support group, they'll come in one day and they're looking, they're walking around, they're smiling still, they look pretty healthy, and they just say, I've decided to go on hospice and stop my chemotherapy or whatever it is they're on. And then we all cry and hug them and watch them die and go to their bedsides and be with them.
Now, Providence is a Catholic hospital.
Yes.
And the Catholic tradition, in terms of the politics of death,
mm-hmm.
is to keep people alive as long as possible and not to end suffering through an intervention, a planned suicide or whatever.
They at Providence, if you decide that you want to take advantage of Oregon's death with dignity law,
yeah.
You have to get a doctor outside of Providence.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They don't tell you not to do it, but they are not allowed to participate in the Oregon's Death with Dignity
because this is an act of faith in
they're
the Catholic,
Catholic
faith.
Hospital.
Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to establish that. We got callers, 231-8187. Let's go to our first caller. Who is
morning.
It? Hi. Kim, good morning.
Hi. I just want to say, this is very exciting for me. I've been hanging on to magic thinking, and I'm going to get this book as quickly as possible. But I've already tried to order it online, and I can't find it. So first I need to know how to get the book.
Okay, this is something Connie can do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're going. I think I understood that you're going to address this health issue. I've had melanoma removed 3 times. And I'm still lucky enough that I've not had to go any further than having them just surgically removed.
You're talking about them on the skin now.
On the skin.
Yeah. Good.
And so, you know, I'm very lucky in that respect. But I'm also facing a situation where after 32 years, my husband's left me for a 32-year-old. And so I'm going to be without insurance very soon. And so I'm facing that, and I'm hoping that you're going to address that this morning also. Anyway, thank you for the inspiration. I think I'm going to get a tent and take off.
Yeah, we will now tell you how to get a hold of the book.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Good
Bye.
Luck.
I have a website, melanomamama.com.
Melanomamama.com.
And on that website is a page, buy this book.
I like it. Buy this book.
That's right.
Melanoma.com.
Melanomamama.com. And buy this book, and then you go to Enfield Distributors. There it'll show you there. You can buy it directly from my distributor. You can also order it through Amazon or anything like that.
Probably if you walk into Powell's and ask, they'll order it for you too.
They should be able to. I'm having trouble right now with the linkage there, but
Amazon would be another way to go.
Amazon, you can also read 2 chapters for free on the Look Inside This Book feature on Amazon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're just tuning in, it's Grim Day. You know, kind of. I don't know.
Oh.
You're having so much. You're so much fun. It doesn't. The resonance isn't there. We don't have the dark. You know, I need dark organ, cascading organ music.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk to Kim a little bit about what to watch for once you have had the melanoma removed for your skin. One thing to watch for is if you get vitiligo, which is where your skin can't produce pigment and you get white splotches on your skin, run to a melanoma oncologist. Do not walk. And the dermatologists don't all know this. If the dermatologist sees that you've got vitiligo, they'll just tell you, we don't know the causes of vitiligo. It's, you know, it's not bad. But it's a sign that your immune system is amping up to fight a recurrence of the melanoma if you're a melanoma patient. It doesn't mean, vitiligo does not mean that everybody who has vitiligo does not have melanoma. But melanoma patients who get vitiligo that's a sign that you need to see
the oncologist.
That's
very useful.
Yes.
Seriously, that's very useful.
Yeah. And the other symptom that I had that went ignored for a long time or not understood was I had about a year and a half of chronic anemia, and they couldn't find the source of the anemia. And I was so far out from my melanoma diagnosis, 18 years, nobody thought to even run a CAT scan to look for tumors. And so it wasn't for a year and a half when I was starting to get blood transfusions every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, I needed a blood transfusion.
Because your red blood cells were non-existent.
Because the tumor that was in my gut was causing bleeding, and I was basically bleeding to death. And I had a grapefruit-sized tumor in my belly that they didn't find for a year and a half. So that delayed the discovery of the metastasis of the melanoma. Yeah,
which of course increases the likelihood of a fatal outcome.
Oh, yeah. You know, when they found it, they were just shaking their heads going, we'll throw the kitchen sink at you just to see what might work. But nobody had any hope for a good outcome longer than a few months of life.
And yet, here you are.
And that's 4 years ago.
Yeah, really. Okay, so if you're just tuning in, we have a grim show with a non-grim person. Connie Crooker, whose book, Melanoma Mama, on life, death, and tent camping, which is actually a fairly funny book.
It's funny.
I think. I recommend it just as a read, by the way. And we do want to hear from people, their comments, their thoughts, their questions.
Connie, Kim had a question about insurance.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was a scary thing. Her partner has left her.
Right. And I didn't understand how old Kim is, because if she's getting close to Medicare—
That's also the new everyone likes to attack Obamacare, but the fact of the matter is that it will insure that person for a pre-existing condition.
Well, I can't speak to that because I don't know the details of.
Well, I don't either.
Qualify.
I shouldn't have said that. Yeah, I believe that. So.
Yeah, because what I worry about Obamacare was when, you know, I was all excited that, oh my gosh, this is, you know, I'm pro universal health care.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Geez, surprise, surprise.
Oh, wow.
But when I found out that it was going to help 30 million Americans, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, we've got over 300 million Americans in this country. That's a drop in the bucket. What is this Obamacare? It's wimpy. You know, it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know who's going to qualify for that. But I do know that when you get to 65 and you get your Medicare, then, you know, I'm on Medicare now and I'm getting really good treatment. So I'm not discouraged about that.
Okay, and I don't know the age of Kim, so we'll let that go for the moment. 2318187, who do we have? Joanne.
Hello?
Hi, Joanne, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I don't think I'm grim. I'm just facing my personal reality. As a waiting-to-die old person, here's just a couple of small things I know, but it's not going to help me with my life. I know that cancer is big bucks business, and as well as mental health care is big bucks. And I think I'll just end there because I'm not going to be able to help this country with all its big problems.
So, okay. Thank you, Joanne. Let's go to another caller. Linda, you're on the air.
Hey, hi, Crooker. I haven't seen you in how long? You're a couple years ahead of me at Reed.
Oh, this is... Who?
It was Wolbert then. I don't know if you even remember me.
Uh-huh.
We both knew Mark Hines. I think he went on to become a priest in at Los Gatos.
Oh, yeah. I remember Mark. Yeah. How you doing, Linda?
Oh, you Reedies, always with your reunions.
Yeah. Go ahead. I remember your lovely, dark, curly hair and fair skin and very kind and compassionate and wise.
Well,
for
thank
your age.
You.
I've never forgotten you.
Thank you. Yeah, too fair skin, as it turns out. That's one of the other...
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. That, you know, people with the redheaded freckled gene are more likely to
succumb.
Absolutely.
Well, I've got little Native American, thank God. That helps.
Yeah, that helps.
But anyway, I just want to let you know I've thought of you often over the years, and you're an outstanding character in my mind, and I just...
Well, I am really flattered. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah. Well, not to break up the...
I know. It's not about melanoma, but I wanted to say hi to Connie.
Great.
Sure. That's
thank
great.
You.
I'm
thank
glad you,
Linda.
Called, really.
All
right. Here's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Just a meta note. When I go to a topic like this...
Mm-hmm.
I have lots and lots of women callers.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to topics of governance or the endless wars or drones or whatever of that sort,
mm-hmm.
Or environmental disasters, I tend to get more men.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not – I don't want to overgeneralize. But I think our culture is rigged toward looking at these – personal tragedies from a feminine, not feminist necessarily, but mm-hmm. it can be, from a feminine perspective.
And that might be because of the history that women were the caregivers. You know, now men are also at their parents' bedsides as they're dying and whatnot.
Yeah, and many men are now child caregivers.
Right, yes. But historically, women were always the caregivers. So the idea of somebody in your family having a disease and you need to be there for them and help with that, you know, mm-hmm. kind of puts you in a role of thinking more about healthcare if that cultural paradigm applies to you.
Huh. Yeah. No, I just do. I just noted it over the years, and I think it's very, it encourages my sexism.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a confession.
Right.
When you think about who's going to call about a show, about a subject, and you know what the subject is in advance,
mm-hmm.
and it always turns out that way.
Yeah.
I'm not criticizing. Please don't hesitate to call if you happen to be a woman. That's not my point.
Right.
My point is, isn't this interesting?
Yeah. And if you happen to be a man, please call, because I love to talk to the men
Okay, so let's go on with our calls. Okay. Is there anything you want to add at this point?
I just wanted to say, Joanne mentioned the economics, and I did want to say that my treatments have been exorbitantly expensive. And when I was on private insurance, it was huge. And my insurance company tried to find a way to dump me, and they weren't able to. But fortunately, in part, that's because I'm a lawyer, and I figured out how to not let them dump me.
Yeah, you're awfully literate in the legal world.
Yeah, yeah. But they were squirming when they saw the bills. I mean, the interleukin-2 treatments that I had cost my insurance.
The what?
Interleukin-2. That's a form of immunotherapy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're talking magic for me.
Yeah, that's the one that I had where I had to be in the hospital two different times for 6 days each.
Getting the IVs.
And then they put me in the intensive care unit. That cost my insurance company over $113,000.
They didn't like that.
They didn't like that. They were trying to get rid of me. But now that I'm on Medicare and my ipilimumab immunotherapy also cost about $120,000, mm-hmm. something like that. But Medicare has limits on what they will pay. And once a healthcare provider takes a Medicare patient, they're agreeing to the Medicare limits. So I don't know how much Medicare got away with not paying that bill, but it was a huge bill.
And this enters into a whole other world about healthcare in America in general.
Right. Yeah.
If you pay attention, let's say you get a bill from the medical school or something for a certain service,
mm-hmm.
you will see when they send you the bill that there's what the bill is mm-hmm. for that service
right.
in general.
Right.
Then there's the discount to the
right.
insurance
That's
company.
Right.
And you begin to realize that the system has multiple layers mm-hmm. which are directly punitive to the independent uninsured person.
That's right. That's right.
And it's essentially they make deals with mm-hmm. the insurance companies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, there are private broker people mm-hmm. who will, for a fee, usually a percentage, argue with both the insurance companies and your providers, mm-hmm. particularly hospitals, to bring the bill down to hopefully a reasonable
yeah.
amount.
And you can do that yourself. I did that once with one of my providers where it had gotten up to where my share, even with good insurance, mm-hmm. I was paying out about $12,000 a year in my own health. For my own part of it, when you add up the premiums that I had to pay, and I wasn't employed, so I didn't have an employer paying health care. I was paying my own premiums, my deductibles, my out-of-pocket up to the out-of-pocket maximum, and I was paying out about $12,000. That was with good insurance in America, you know. And at one point when one of my bills got up to around $3,000 with one of the providers, I went in and I said, if I pay this all at once today, what discount will you give me?
Huh.
And I thought I was going to get a 20% discount. That's what I was fighting for. And they came up with 25%.
Now, that is interesting.
Yes, yes.
So one of the things to know, folks, if you do have either a life-threatening or a very dramatic, expensive thing that requires health care mm-hmm. of a variety of sources, you need to either hire or yourself be proactive in reducing that billing.
That's right.
And it's a negative entrepreneurial situation.
Right. Yeah.
I guess
yeah.
that's what it, you call it.
Yeah. Yeah. The bills aren't really exactly what they look like if you go in and just kind of.
But you got to be savvy, and you're sick at the time.
Right. Yeah. And you have to pay something. You can't get out from under the bill. You just have to figure out how to negotiate it.
I just wanted to get that out there because it really both angers me and pleases me, ironically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is to know that you can get a discount. But it's outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a medical school saying I owe $500. These are figures pulled from the air.
Yeah.
I owe $500. Right. And then it turns out they give the insurance company $250.
That's right.
But I owe $500.
That's right.
Which means that I should be able to go walk in there and say, okay, you're charging $250 to the insurance company. Make me pay $250.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they maybe will.
They maybe will. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. 231-8187. We're talking with Connie Crooker, whose book, Melanoma Mama, I love that title, on life, death, and camping, which I think is a very funny book and a very a good read.
Thank you.
Cancer book. How can that be? It is a good read. So I congratulate you on
Thank
that.
Thank you.
I think it's a pretty neat book. Anyway, I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Who's next? Thomas.
Yeah. Hi, Joe and Connie. I'm a man without a prostate, and I had it removed about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I'm pretty much cynical about the medical, I'm just going to call it what I think it is, a racket, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what's facing me is more treatment by the regular medical establishment. And I've done a lot of, research and continuing care on myself with alternative type of things. And you've been talking mostly about the insurance racket and the medical racket. But what alternatives did you try? Are you doing anything along the way now in terms of alternative treatments for yourself? Because a lot of those things can be used in conjunction with the standard treatments if you decide to go that way.
Well, that's a very good question. Richard, was that it? Your name?
Thomas.
Thomas. I'm sorry, Thomas. I just participated in a conference at the Naturopathic College, or they call it the National College of Natural Medicine is the name of it now. And it was an oncology conference. And I was a speaker about Melanoma Mama. And I listened to their speakers specifically on melanoma. And there really isn't a lot out there in the way of natural treatment for my particular form of cancer. And they acknowledge that immunotherapy has a pretty good, or not a pretty good, but at least a track record of giving some people some
extra longevity. Yeah, I would call it
a track record, yeah. Right. I mean, I was told before I went in for this hideous interleukin treatment that I had an 8% chance of having any benefit from it, but that they could bring me to death's door with it. So I said, hey, it's a chance, I'll go, you know. But there really isn't much in the way of natural treatments for melanoma. What I do is I call what I do not complementary medicine, but just some complementary self-care. And the things that I do to keep myself fit and happy are things that may or may not also boost my immune system. And they include my support group. Support systems mm-hmm. are very good. Eating healthy, and that, however you define that, exercise is a big important one, and any stress reduction techniques, yoga, that kind of thing. I like to do yoga. I ski. I hike. I get outdoors. I do things that lift my spirits, and I think that anything that you can do that makes your general day-to-day life, quality of life, happier, has a chance of boosting your overall health. But I do not make any claims to curing my own cancer or increasing my longevity by the things that
I
do.
And I actually want to throw something in. This is me speaking now.
Yeah.
I think it is very dangerous, given what we do know and do not know about any kind of cancer, mm-hmm. to not first go to the allopathic, the traditional medical world, mm-hmm. To get a complete diagnosis, a complete evaluation
right.
with all their techniques, which can right. be very annoying but necessary,
yeah.
and work with them in conjunction with others who, you know, vitamins might be useful. You're not going to cure cancer, as far as we know, with a vitamin therapy. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things that might help you, but they're adjuncts. They're supportive.
Yeah, complementary.
Or complementary. Yeah. And right. that's really important. Yeah. I have known people who really had early stages of a variety of cancers who mm-hmm. had they directly, in fact, Steve Jobs is another example.
Yeah, he's another example.
If he directly had surgery, he'd probably still be here.
Yeah, but let me speak to the fellow who called about. He said it was prostate cancer.
Yeah, he's still on the line.
There's some new.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yes, there's some new.
As it were.
Yes, there's some new literature that I just read recently about doctors questioning how often they really need to do surgery for prostate cancer. They're rethinking that one. They think they've overdone it. For guys.
But you don't need to hear that since your prostate's
gone. Right. Yeah, but I mean, but it is something that is being evaluated, whether that is the better approach.
Okay, and let me say something about about some of the alternatives. You know, you can go either way with this. You know, people turn themselves over to the medical profession, or, you know, some people go totally alternative and just face the consequences, because in reality, you know, nobody knows what the outcome is going to be, and nobody knows if you're going to be cured.
Well, wait a minute. Now, there are stats. You can't ignore the statistical evidence.
Well, that's what I'm getting to. That's
okay.
What I'm getting to. And again, look at the stats from either approach. But there are some things like there's a therapy called a Gerson therapy, Gerson diet, and something called a Budwig protocol. Mm. Some of these things are widely accepted, and at least anecdotally, it looks like they have a very good success rate. You know, when people with advanced cancers, especially with this Gerson diet, are treated in their clinics, which, of course, sometimes are chased out of the country because of the FDA and the AMA. They won't let them, you know, apply their therapy here. People have pretty good results with some of this stuff. So I think, you know, you've got to choose what you want to do. And I agree that, you know, a lot of people take that middle road, work, you know, go to your doctor, get their, because I also go to the National College of Natural Medicine. As a matter of fact, I'm going on Thursday to see a urological, you know, he's a urologist, a naturopath urologist specializing in cancer as a consultation thing. I'm not in any danger of dying right now, but I've been kind of, you know, treating myself with alternatives and reading a lot about that. So there are some things that are quite powerful that, you know, may just work for some people.
Okay, let me respond to that a little bit. First of all, I heartily agree that everybody has the right to choose how much and what kind of treatment they're going to get. But I do believe that they need to be well informed about whether there is whether there are scientific studies, whether there have been clinical trials, whether there are predictions about the percentages of patients that will benefit from whatever treatment that is given. And once you know those facts and you've got them clear, you can make a choice. And you can make choices to go for treatments that have not been subject to scientific clinical trials and only have anecdotal evidence. If that is your preference for your way of approaching the medical world, but you need to know that there is a difference between the scientific evaluation of groups of people who've been given the treatment and they've studied how many people benefit from it, and so having that knowledge, then you certainly have the right to choose one or the other, or no treatment at all. You know, people have their own choices, and but I lean toward the scientific and the substances that have been subject to clinical trials, because they can tell me, you know, well, you at least have a chance with this because we've seen it before, and I have benefited from the standard treatments. And the other thing is, what was I going to say? I'll think of it in a second. Joe's anxious here.
I'm anxious. I'm very anxious.
Yeah.
Well, I have a couple, three things to do.
Yeah.
First of all, if you're just tuning in, we're with Connie Crooker, who's book, which I think is a very funny book, actually, Melanoma Mama on Life, Death, and Tent Camping. It's really a worthwhile book to get. And she's here with us in studio. And we're talking about, she has melanoma. We're talking about cancer and cancer treatment and issues of modalities and so on. Frequently on KBOO, I hear people calling, and I'm going to say this, and it's going to piss some people off. Which is,
you've never done that before, Joe. You've never pissed anybody off.
My conservative position is that with a life-threatening disorder, you first go to what's known as evidence-based medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason not to use other kinds of therapies, but I would treat them as adjunctive, that is, supportive or supplemental, rather than just using them straight. And I use the Steve Jobs example, because here's a bright guy, and he was really, really, really paranoid about surgery. And he delayed
for a long, long mm-hmm. time. And one of the last things he said, really, was he wished now that he'd had conventional medicine right at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's gone. All right, I have to do some business here. I did want to say one more thing.
I remembered what I was going to say.
Sure.
One thing that the caller spoke to was a certain specific named alternative treatment.
Yeah.
And then he said that it was good for cancers, plural. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's important to understand is that cancer is not one disease. It is a whole range of different ways that our bodies decide to produce extra cells that run amok and don't and just keep growing even though they're not supposed to. But there's all different biochemical reasons why that happens in different cancers. And so the mainstream medicine is targeting the specific process. And so the claims that, you know, such and such is good for cancer, that pushes my buttons. I just go, which cancer, and why does that work at a biochemical level? So, you know, I just want people to know that there are different treatments for different cancers for a reason. Because cancer is different.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I want to talk a little bit about what's coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio. Chuck Collins, co-director of United for a Fair Economy, speaks on income inequality. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, which, of course, is headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a look at the case of the CIA whistleblower who went public on U.S. torture under Bush and was just sentenced to 30 months hard time, and our weekly report on occupied Palestine. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D. May Roberts interviews Peabody Award-winning radio producer and writer Scott Carrier about his life and work. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Ava Lake interviews Terry Timchuk, executive director of the Oregon Historical Society, about the events and exhibitions happening for Black History Month at the Historical Society. And we want to thank KBOO members for your generous support. And if you have not become a member, oh, badness, please go to kboof.fm and click on the Donate Today thingy and give us some money or we'll come to your house and stomp on your flowers. All right. Meanwhile, back here in studio with Connie Crooker and talking about cancer, we want to hear from you. 231-8187. Charlene, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Yeah. commenting on a few things. First of all, I just finished a pretty grueling 7 months of work for ovarian cancer, regular chemotherapy and then radical hysterectomy and then interperitoneal chemotherapy where I had the chemo directly injected into my abdomen, peritoneal. Just completed that. It's pretty debilitating. So I'm hoping to get stronger after that. You mentioned your men and women, Joe, and I just wanted to address that because for women, gynecological cancers have always been just kind of a women's thing, and it's just a hysterectomy because they're hysterical and they really don't know what's going on, and these good male doctors of the whatever century, you know, would take care of them and And women have really been at the brunt of until very recently, most clinical trials and different things that were made for men, and how can we keep our men strong and our men...
So you think there's a prejudice and a bias toward working at rather than with women?
Oh, you can say it yourself. You don't have to ask me. Yeah, so I wanted to address that. And then the cost, too. My interperitoneal weekly cost of that is $17,000. That's just for going to a clinic and sitting for 5 or 6 hours and having the medications that go beforehand, and I must say they do a nicer job than they did 15 years ago as far as caring for your initial side effects. I have never, I can say this luckily, with all of the therapy that I've had, it's been very harsh, and I have a lot of other side effects, but I have not had a nausea or vomiting or anything like that. So I know that there's a lot going on to care for the person. I wanted to say with the what you mentioned with the paying too. If you just have small bills, it won't pay. So let your bills add up, and then you can start to ask for discounts.
That's right.
That's a very good point, actually, as a strategy.
You're not going to get any discounts, so I'm just saying that too. And then the clinical trials, you have to understand the different reasons why different companies are doing clinical trials. Sometimes it's just because they want to increase their bottom line, and they've just bought something from another company that they feel they can do a clinical trial on, and all the other clinical trials have gone downhill, so they want to increase. they think they can make money on this one. For instance, I was looking at one that my doctor recommended, or didn't recommend, actually, just said it was out there. And it was, this was the same drug that they tried on lots of other cancers. They it had gone so poorly that they'd had to cancel the trials in the middle because people were doing much worse on it. And now they thought, okay, now we'll make it a clinical trial for ovarian cancer. And I'm going like, yeah, I really want to be part of that. Yeah, right.
So if I understand what you're saying, you're suggesting that the pharmaceutical industry essentially is exploiting.
Shareholders want to make money. And they can't make money if they're not making product. And they can't make product if they're not doing clinical trials. And they can't do clinical trials if they don't have something to trial. So I'm just putting that out there that's you can go online and find all that out.
Okay, well, thank you for the call. Yeah. Connie, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, Charlene, first of all, I feel for you going through all the harshness of all these treatments. That is an experience that people who have not gone through do not understand what it is day to day to live with that, the difficulties of having to be the what I call the professional cancer patient. Your life is hijacked by this process. As far as the funding issues go, I don't know so much about ovarian cancer. I know that breast cancer patients have been very good at getting attention onto breast cancer research and treatments.
May I just say, but the reason is there are so many breast cancer patients that it's viable for the companies. They know that when they put something out, they're going to have a huge customer base with ovarian cancer.
And also because the cancer patients themselves stood up on their hind legs and said, let's do something about this, and there were enough of them. And so breast cancer is very well funded. My area, melanoma, is not so well funded for research, but my two melanoma oncologists, I have one on the East Coast and one here in Portland, they're both researchers themselves, and they're science guys and brainy guys, and they do not recommend clinical trials that they don't feel might have some efficacy. They have strong bias towards saving lives of their patients. And so I don't see the economic motive there. When they have recommended clinical trials to me, they're talking completely about, you know, what the history of this drug is as far as helping people and that sort of thing, from my researcher doctor's point of view. As far as the drug companies themselves go, of course they want to make money. That's one of their purposes for being there, and they're going to figure out how to try and do it. But they have to do it in conjunction with medical people who will conduct these trials. And the doctors who see, you know, bogus charlatan kind of medicines coming down the pike, if they're good researchers, they're not going to stick their necks out and their put the time and money of their hospital resources into conducting these trials.
You know, this is a very difficult issue, and we get calls on something like this mm-hmm. inevitably. It is because there are many different cancers, and the mm-hmm. name cancer simply means a growth that's uncontrolled, and there are so many different things mm-hmm. that are going on. And sometimes there are, for no known reason, spontaneous remissions. Sometimes people die no matter what, very quickly. Sometimes it's a long-term thing. Sometimes one person responds with one treatment and not another, and a whole host of complex issues, plus all of the problems of doing research, and the fact of the enormous weight of money-making driving for the pharmaceutical industry, plus the suspicion that people like me have that there's a lot of environmental issues in breast cancer, I think of particularly in that context, even though there's no smoking gun mm-hmm. in that case. All of that and the drama of the reality of death coming out of cancer have led people into a lot of behavior, a lot of thoughtful and not so thoughtful behavior about what to do and what's going on mm-hmm. and who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. The bad guy is cancer. Mm-hmm. The bad guy is cancer, and cancer is not an unnatural process. Mm-hmm. It is something that happens, and it happens for reasons, and we hope we can find the reasons, because if we can find the reasons, we can find ways of avoiding it. Mm-hmm. But we're not very far along in that process.
That's right.
I after much thought about this, really need to urge people to, if they have a suspicion or if they're diagnosed with something that is a tumorous condition, that they begin by looking at mainstream medicine. I'm very concerned, and I've known people who've done this, who go alternative medicine out of an act of kind of anger and faith. Mm-hmm. But the two things, I think, drive that. And then end up, not making it. It doesn't mean that you're going to make it because you go to see the allopathic doctor. Mm-hmm. But to ignore that research, to ignore the evidence-based material that exists, even though it is far from perfect, is a foolish endeavor, I think. And I want to emphasize that. And the Steve Jobs case, I keep using that example because it's such a classic example of a brilliant person who really did not, for a variety of personal reasons, I think, want to get into a surgical situation. So, I just wanted to bring that up. We're coming out of time. Let's take one more call if we can. Do we have time for one more call? Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe and Connie. I know Joe from the Portland State Park Blocks days.
And oh, my goodness.
From law school. Hi there. I thought I could contribute something here by letting people know that under the Obamacare health plan, the pre-existing condition problem totally goes away in 2014.
That's really important. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to let people know is the Oregon Insurance Commission is a great place to call if you have problems with your carrier, your insurance coverage. A lot of employers are now self-employed.
Yeah, I have to stop you there because I want to thank Connie. We're out of time.
Thanks for calling, Linda.
And Linda's point about what happens in 14 is very important. Thank you all very much. We'll see you next week. Keep on keeping on and keep listening to KBOO.
It ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
January 25th, 2013, KBOO Navigator Report. We produced an outstanding 8-hour live broadcast of Keep Alive the Dream, the 28th anniversary tribute to Martin Luther King Jr. Thank you, remote broadcast team. This week, KBOO members will receive the first wave of new membership cards powered by Supportland. Enjoy the enhanced new benefits.
KBOO will be producing live on-location broadcasts of the 2013 Illihi Monthly Lecture Series, Who Owns You and What You Can Do About It, making this valuable information available to the entire community. Tune in, turn on, and remember, we'll air Tuesday, January 29th at 6 p.m. Hear Sharon Wood Wortman share memories as a volunteer KBOO reporter in the 80s. If you have a story to share from KBOO's past, contact Lynn Fitch, 503-231-8032, extension 222, or navigator at kboo.org. This has been the Weekly Navigator Report. Thank you.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's a minute after 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Chuck Collins, co-director of United for a Fair Economy, speaks on income inequality. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a look at the case of the CIA whistleblower who went public on U.S. torture under Bush and was just sentenced to 30 months hard time, and our weekly report on occupied Palestine. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host Demay Roberts interviews Peabody-winning radio producer and writer Scott Carrier about his life and work. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Carrie Timchuk, Executive Director of the Oregon Historical Society, about the events and exhibitions happening for Black History Month at the Historical Society. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a member, please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
I have talked to business people who have said, if you care about capitalism, whatever that means to you, you need to be very concerned about this maldistribution of wealth, because this is distorting the capitalism that you profess to believe in. It's creating monopolies and distortions and power concentrations that are warping and destroying capitalism. If you care about small business in this country, then why is it a small business has to compete on an unlevel playing field with these global corporations that have an entirely different set of rules?
That's Chuck Collins, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Chuck Collins on income inequality.